Hey, hey, everyone. Tessa here with the 99 Dev Problem Show with my dear friend, Carl Alexander. Carl, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Carl. I have a wonderful Carl board behind me. That's like a whole, that's like, oh, he's there to creep out people, but, you know, like, and Zoom calls with clients. But yeah, I don't even know how to describe myself at this point, but basically, since this is a dev thing, I'm a programmer. I started programming when I'm 41. I started programming when I was like six. So I've been doing it for a while. Yeah. I did Logo. I don't know if you know Logo. Like, it was like Logo Writer. It was like an Apple thing. It was a little turtle.
And then
you could draw and stuff like that. I think it was 8 or 10. I was in the news because I did like a robotics thing that was like controlled by the computer. Like, there was an animation and it would like basically run the animation and then control motors. So like 1 year I had a Ferris wheel, another year I had, the more complicated one was I had a, what do you call those things? Sorry, my first language is not English, FYI. So, you know, like those, it's like they float above the water. Like there's like the hydro.
Like a hoverboard?
Yeah, but it's the actual like ship.
Like the like, water kind.
It's like, they have like fans underneath and then they lift. So mm-hmm. you have two fans controlling the thing. So I had two fans controlled by motor, like in a pool. Yeah, it was cool. It was cool. But yeah, that was all Logo. Then I did Basic. I did like.
So you're just like a true nerd.
I'm a true nerd. Like I'm a true, true to the bone nerd, basically. But I always loved programming. Like, I've done teaching, I've done like writing books. Like I always compare it to Legos.
Yes.
Yeah. So like programming to me is Legos, basically. It's like Legos with code. Like you're like, oh, what do you feel like building today? Okay, cool. And then you can make it a reality. I'm like, what's not to love about that? I mean, that comes back to what we were talking when we just went live, basically. You want to go back to that? Yeah.
Well, like let's dive into that. Yeah. One quick thing I like to ask firsthand. So let's address the Lego comment first off. Okay. I don't know if you noticed, but it's in my logo. And so my Friday guest, which was Noah Harris, also talked about how building as a developer is like Lego. So you two should hang out because you obviously love programming and Legos just the same.
Oh my God. I have so many programming things that I would love to hang out with I just want to hang out with programmers all the time, right?
Like, yes.
That's why you're in DevRel, right? You just like,
yes.
We can talk about that too. Like, that's why I built a product for developers, because they're my people. And I just want to build a product for my people. And it's easier to, again, we're going to talk for a while. There's going to be, I noticed that your thing was Legos. I love it.
Yes, because that's what it is, right? Is like, and so the essence of my brand, and then I'm going to ask you about your developer education is what we're going to get into. But the essence of my brand is that, right? Is that at the end of the day, I've been in DevRel and I've built for developers. I don't necessarily build code for developers now, right? I build programs, mm-hmm. I build communities, I build experiences, right? I build this stuff that developers want. And so I very much wanted that same essence. So I really appreciate that you see that, because that's so important. So, if you were programming as a young child and doing some very cool things.
Yeah.
Did you actually go to school for anything related to technology? Do you have a college degree? Yes. Like, what's sort of education?
Yeah. So I have, you've seen my jacket, right? Should I go get it?
Maybe.
I'll go get it.
I don't know if I've seen it. I'm going to go get it. Carl's great, y'all. Also, I think he tripped on the way out because he made a little noise. The energy that developers have when it comes to hanging out with developers is like really legit.
Okay. So
I have seen that.
So this is my Queen's University in Canada. They it's my applied science jacket. It's the most priceless thing that I own.
I love that you think that way.
So I did do college. I did computer engineering in the early 2000s. So I graduated in 06.
Cool.
And back then, there wasn't like computer, like software engineering, like the way that there is now. So basically, the way it worked was that you went into computer engineering and then you could choose an option. You could choose software option or electrical option. And basically computer engineering was kind of sitting in this weird area between electrical engineering and computer science.
Yep.
And basically they would steer you, do you want to do a bit more computer science or do you want to do a bit more electrical? So if you did, I have friends that did that and they work more with telecoms now.
Like, yes.
So
yeah.
Like I have a friend in New Brunswick and he works with like antennas, basically, like telecom antennas. I had another friend that ended up at Nortel, like doing like switches and stuff like that. So,
yep.
But you didn't have like, so I just did the software option.
Yep.
But before that, I just did like my high school had a couple of computer courses, but it was just like basic HTML. Mm-hmm. They did have like 3D. I don't know what the software was called, but they had like 3D modeling. So I got into.
I did 3D, that too.
Like 3D stuff. Like I did an N64 logo again. Bona fide nerd here. So like so
dude,
I did
an N64 is where it's logo. At though.
N64 logo rotating. So
yes.
I ended up graduating and then I didn't even do computer science stuff when I graduated. I might have told you that story. I worked for a law firm. I graduated and I just started basically working as like level 2 tech support in a law firm. That's because I'd been doing a lot of sysadmin work, right?
Yep. So
for a long time. I've been a sysadmin since I'm about 16. Like I had like Windows servers, switches in my house. Like when routers, like, you know, the thing that comes with your modem now for free used to cost like $400. And I was just like, oh, I can use a computer from work that they're throwing out and just like do all the networking myself. So I just did all of that. So
heck yes.
But I went back to work for them. And because I didn't know what to do. Like it's like the catch 22 of like you graduate, how do you get experience, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And they offered me a job. Like I was in Greece, I was backpacking and they were like, do you want to work? And I was just like, sure. And I started working there. And I was doing sysadmin stuff for them. So I was higher up, but then I started building tools for them.
Ooh.
So I was like, because they wanted to do stuff. And I was just like, oh, well, I love programming. Let me just like start do some .NET. Like, and I started working with the SDKs, the Microsoft SDKs to like just build tools for them, like little UI applications.
Yep, that could totally.
Like
efficiency to their day.
Yeah, but I mean that's like where I got into like programming. Like I just like building tools for devs, for people. Like basically, you know, like that's what my little side business is. It's and I just, you know, I kind of liked it and then I got bored there. That's the story of my life. Like I get bored. Like
I can relate to that.
The ADHD side basically. And I got bored and I was like, that's like 2008. So like that, I literally quit when the crash happened. And then I was like, okay, how am I going to get a job? So I tried applying for jobs. Even if I coded all this life, I've never successfully passed a coding exam.
Those are really weird and tricky though. So
I've literally never, like I would ace. I mean, you can see I'm pretty outgoing and like, I'm like one of the few, like I'm a rare nerd that somehow managed social skills. So yes, like, so
I can relate.
I would kill the in-person interviews. And then they're like, we love you. We just need to make you pass a quick programming exam to just like see everything. And I was like, oh, I'll see you never basically.
Why do you think that is? Like, do you think it was because like the way that they tested you or just.
Cause it's not relevant. It's just not relevant. I'm super against like when I did hiring later on, like I just never passed anybody a programming exam. I just don't think it's relevant. I mean, we see it back and forth. Look, hiring is hard. Like
it is, it really is.
Like it's really hard. I fully grasp how hard, you know, like I listened to a couple of podcasts, like there was Adam Watan that he was like, they got thousands of applications and then they just ended up hiring somebody they knew. And I was like, yeah, that makes a ton of sense. That's why, like, I think networking is usually the best way to get hired because honestly, But it was just not in my brain. Like, I was just like, I don't need to memorize, like, what's an interface or, like, how to explain that. Like, I was straight out of school. Like, I was doing this, like I knew how to program, but I just didn't know conceptually everything, and I didn't remember it all. And I was just like, this is dumb, and I just wouldn't do it. But I really wanted to build tools. Like, I applied because I'm from Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
So for all the video game lovers, like, there's a lot of video game studios. Like, it's like the Mecca. So, like, I had applied to Ubisoft to be a tools dev, basically, to build tools for the developers. Because I was just like, I love building tools. Like, it's just, that's what I wanted to do. Like, I just wanted to build stuff for devs even back then. And, but yeah, I just couldn't pass a programming exam. And then the first place that didn't pass me a programming exam, I got the job, basically. And that's like when I got into WordPress. Like, I literally built their entire PHP division and everything. And, you know, they were super happy. But yeah, they didn't pass me a programming test. They were like, I was applying for a .NET job. And then they were like, oh, well, actually, we're trying to do this thing with WordPress. Do you know anything about it? I'm like, no, but I can figure it out. And the rest is history. But yeah, it was hard. Like, it was just, it's a weird journey. Like, it was just a weird journey to, like, get programming jobs. Like, I was just, yeah, it was just not what I was aiming for.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, I mean, that's like kind of the career, my career trajectory is like, it's always goes back to programming. Because I remember, like, we're looping back to what we wanted to talk about. It's kind of funny. But basically, I did the sysadmin stuff. I built tools. I'm like, oh, wait, I love programming. Why am I not doing that?
Yep.
Then I got hired to do the WordPress, the PHP stuff. And then, like I was talking about, like, before the show started.
Which is where we met.
Which is where we met. But back then, like we were talking about, there was no career track for engineering.
Yep. Yep.
So I had applied to, like, my path at the time, I always joke there's an alternative universe where I succeeded, but, like, I had applied to Harvard to do an MBA.
You and me both.
But, like, I had applied to Harvard to do MBA, Harvard, MIT. Like, I had a really good GMAT. I was just like, okay, well, I'll just get into management consulting, or, like, go to McKinsey or Bain or whatever. Like that's, what else am I going to do? Like, you know, like, but I wrote all these essays, and then I just realized, like, one, I like managing people and I wanted to build my own company, but also, like, I just prefer coding. Like, I think managing people is the hardest thing I ever did, but
yeah,
I just like coding.
Yeah.
Like, I just like coding, and I wanted to code, and I just decided I was going to try to build a business where I'm still trying, you know, 12 years later, but basically I just wanted to code. And
yep.
I think that's what it just comes back to with me, is I just always want to code.
Yeah.
And I want to be involved with code, like, which is great now, because, like, I've I'm so out of it, like, for the engineering management track, like, I know all these titles now. I had to look it up because, like, I was dealing with a potential acquisition, and I was just like, what title would I give myself? You know, like, I don't even know where I fit with that. And I fell on, like, principal engineer or something like that. Like, you know, something, I think you're supposed to be, like, basically expert in multiple fields. And then you do a lot of mentoring. Like, I like teaching devs. Yeah. I like devs. So it's
distinguished. Like, that's the one you want. Cause that's the absolute top level.
Yeah. Distinguished. I mean, Yeah, but just, like, in terms of what the tasks was, and that we talked about it when we were in Portland, actually, because I started doing a bit of consulting around that, like, like fractional engineering leadership.
I was at WordCamp US in Portland.
WordCamp US in Portland. And I didn't know there was a need for that. And there's kind of a bit of a need. Like, it's like, engineering leadership is interesting because, like, a lot of times, like we talked, like, a lot of these smaller shops, it's their leader guy that gets promoted. It's exactly my problem, right? It's those people that become the CTO and stuff, and then they don't have time to do the actual engineering leadership, but they don't have enough. It's not big enough for them to do it, have somebody full time do it. So there's a bit of a space for that, but I do enjoy that. But yeah, it's like, it's weird for, like, the career path. Like, I'm always trying to figure it out on my own, because it was just never that simple. when I started off, like it was just like nobody had asked these questions. Google was still relatively new, like, you know, and they're kind of like the forefront of like having that kind of engineering track internally. So it was a really weird time, like, and yeah, it was just, but it always goes back to coding for me. Like, I like developers. It's the same thing as you. I love developers. I built a product for developers. I love developers. I want to make their life easier. Mm-hmm. I want to make my life easier. And it's easier to empathize, right?
Yep. When you're
all the time.
Sorry.
Right? No, go ahead.
Not to cut you off. I was going to say, I think like it's been so interesting. And I think like doing this show was like a big trigger into spending time with developers, but in a way that obviously can help me market my business. Right. And so people can get to understand sort of these different types of developers and, you know, what they care about and what they want, because my clients are building tools for developers. Right. So the sort of the things you enjoy. But so when I was at where I'm getting to, right, is like, I was at WordCamp US, you know, you were there, obviously we got to connect there quite a bit. And then there was, an event in early December called Commit Your Code in Dallas, that Danny Thompson brought together. So a very developer curated event. He's a developer. He built the event. He brought together developers. And I was saying that at the event, it was like interesting how all these people were like, yeah, I'm normally introverted, but like, you know, I love these types of events. I want to talk to other devs. And I was like, see, like, we are not antisocial. And so I actually tweeted it out.
Oh my God.
I was like, we are so not antisocial.
Do you want to go on a complete trend? Do you want to go on a complete crazy tangent right now? Because I have, this is like something I'm working with my therapist, but I want to pitch maybe, I'm trying to write the pitch for WordCamp Europe.
Ooh, well, let me finish this and then let's talk about this, because I think you have tons of it. So what I did is I just tweeted it really quick. And so I know you're going to have tons of feedback. As I tweeted it really quick and I was like, developers are not antisocial. We are antisocial to anyone who is not us. If we find out that you are a fellow developer or a fellow programmer or whatever, it's like an instant relationship. Like, I don't remember the exact time that you and I first met. I think it was WordCamp San Diego, but never fails that I meet someone else and they're like, you're a developer. And I'm like, you're a developer. And then all of a sudden, like, we're best friends. It's like stepbrothers, you know, it just is like instant. So let's talk about this and what you're thinking and
Your soapbox. So, my soapbox, I mean, I'm writing my year in review still right now because they, I mean, last year was 10,000 words. So it was just like, it's like at 3,000 or something right now. So last year, I talked a lot about basically autism, basically. Mm. Like I'm a high functioning autistic person, basically. And I'm just slowly coming to grips with that.
Sure.
But one of the things that my first therapist got sick this year, and I got found a new one who specializes with adult autistic people, especially people in their 40s, like me. You were just not diagnosed, basically. Like most people, you learn that you're autistic. I don't have any kids, so basically, but for most people, they learn they're autistic because their children get a diagnosis and they're like, wait, I'm like that. So does that mean? And then like the answer is yes. And
so, the answer is yes.
But I learned so much. And I realized that so many of us, like developers, are like that.
Yep. And lots of neurodivergence.
Lots of neurodivergence. But what got me really excited about what you said is that my therapist talked this year about this theory called the double empathy problem. Which comes from this research in the 2010. So it's really recent. But basically, the stereotype about like, especially autistic people, is that they're not good socially, right? So the premise of the research was like, okay, we're going to take neurotypical people, neurodivergent people. If we put them together, they're going to struggle, right? So like that's like assumed. But what happens if we separate them? Well, we'd assume the neurotypical people are going to be fine because like they know how to socialize and stuff like that. But we expect that the neurodivergent people will not be able to socialize really well because they struggle socially. But that's not what happened. When you separated both of them, they did fine. And that's because they communicate differently. And that comes back to what you were saying about. It's just developers,
they want like themselves.
They're kind of like, they're, a lot of it is neurodivergence, right? So like that's why they always like, even like if you want to talk about it, like that's why a lot of the job postings, the way like they screen people, like they're looking a bit for like that kind of neurodivergence and candidates. You know, that doesn't mean that if you're not neurodivergent, you can't be a programmer. It's just like you think about the stereotypes of programmers and all that stuff. It's a lot of that. But it's really interesting because that's why, like, when you put programmers together, like, they understand, like, oh, like, I can't deal with people right now. Completely. Totally get it. Like, go away. Go find your safe space, you know, like.
Exactly. But then you also can sit next to each other and be like, I can't deal with people right now. And just completely be in your own little zone sitting next to each other and not care.
And you're
because
not gonna offend it.
They
you're
get
not
you.
Offending anyone. Yeah. And you're not offending.
Yes.
Anyone, right.
Exactly.
And so it's really interesting. So I really want to talk a lot about that, basically, because there's a lot more stuff, but like, it's just the way you talked about it made me think about that all the time, because the double empathy problem is basically just you don't communicate. So you have to empathize with the other side. So if you want to, you have to double empathize. So you have to think about what you're thinking, translate it to what they're thinking, and then translate what they're saying back to you. So it's a lot of work. That's why a lot of times people feel tired, right? Like, you know, you get tired of, you know, it's very common for developers, like they, you know, you deal with a non-developer person and you're like, I'm tired of this. Like, I can't deal with that anymore.
Yep.
And it's just because it's just demanding to do all this. And I've been lucky because I'm high functioning, like I can do a lot of it, but you saw me at Portland, I just come out of like a burnout, like an autistic burnout. And I was like much less social. Like I was like, oh, I need to take time off, you know, like it go my room, I would sleep and stuff like that because I was there to network. Like, you know, we just talked about hiring, right? Like I do consulting. How do I get clients and work is networking. So I have to be on. Like, so like when I need my recharge, I go back and then, but it's exactly what you're talking about. That's why I would love to do, like, I always wanted, if I had more time, to bring back LoopConf, you know, the WordPress.
Oh, LoopConf was so good. Ryan, let's bring back LoopConf in SLC. It has to be in SLC. Like, needs to be.
I think I'm trying to get Raquel. Like, we have a friend named Raquel that
Wonderland Curious.
That's trying to organize events now, so in the WordPress space. So she's doing a business one, but I told her, like, if that's successful, you should look into doing that one next, because I think there's a lot of need for that. And yeah, developers want to hang out with each other, and they want to talk about nerdy stuff,
dev stuff,
and talk shop and stuff like that. Like, I had, speaking of like all this neurodivergent stuff, like I learned really early on that I should just not talk about programming. So I just never talk about it. Like, the only time I talk about
that's
programming,
that's so heartbreaking.
But it's true though. Like, my parents, like my mom was a dentist. Like, a lot, everybody was like kind of the medical side. I faint to blood. So I always joke that I went to the other applied science. Like, my sister is a veterinarian, but like, I just like, I faint to blood. So it's like, it's over. Like, I can't do. Also, I have my shaking too. So it's just can't be a doctor. Can't do that. But they would always be really interested in what they were talking about. But I would like start talking about programming stuff, and they would their eyes would glaze over, you know. And it was the same thing with a lot of my family. Like, it was just, even when I went on my own, they didn't quite understand what I did for a living. But once I started doing public speaking, they're like, oh, Carl's a public speaker. I was like, oh, okay. You know, like, he speaks at conferences. And then
they
like,
can
okay,
understand
then,
that.
They can understand that. But it taught me really early on that if I want to navigate the social world, I just don't talk about programming. So it's sometimes hard to get me to talk about it unless we're in these kind of safe space. Because it is a kind of a safe space to be in a conference like that, and be able to talk shop. And I have there's a slightly different problem too in the WordPress space, which is the skill range is so large.
Oh yeah. That's.
And I'm at like basically like the 0.001% percentile, like at the top. So I know all the smart people that I can talk to, but you know, like half the time there's not that much conversation to be had in the first place, but you know, that's the reality of it. And but that's why those events are important. That's why I brought up LoopConf, and I said, like, I would love to bring that back, because there's just something about having a space for developers where they're just like, okay, like, I'm just talking to other developers. We can nerd out, get really offended because you use like spaces versus tabs or like something yes. crazy like that. Like, you know, like, crazy. You know, like, okay, go, you're using tabs, like, go over there. Although, like, yeah.
We're anti spaces over here.
Yeah. I've changed. I still use spaces, but I understand now why tabs are better, basically. But it's only for the accessibility aspect that I let them win, basically. I remember reading somebody that said, like, for screen readers, because there's a Alex Stein, I think. Mm-hmm. He's in the WordPress space. Like, he's a blind programmer. And I think it was through him that I heard about it. But basically, if you have spaces on the Braille reader, it's like 4 characters. Right. So it just takes a lot of space. It's not like accessible for, you know, a tab is 1 character.
So tabs win is what you're saying.
So tabs win, basically. Woo! I still use spaces. Eventually, I'll just do a whole thing where I'll switch to tabs. I haven't pulled the trigger on that yet, but I admit that for that reason, I think you should use spaces. Not spaces, tabs, just from an accessibility standpoint, because yeah. I'm really for that. And I think that was like, before that, I didn't care. Like, I was just use yeah. whatever you want. I really like spaces. But when I heard that argument, I was like, okay, there's an actual real.
There's a right answer.
There's a right answer, because it does affect them
yeah.
negatively.
Yep.
You know,
because
even if you're like, oh, well, it's 4 spaces, but it's there's only so many characters they can have on this screen, right? Like, it's not like us, right? You can like just make your screen like zoom out or something like that, and all that stuff. Like, they don't have that option. So for me,
and I'm sure it probably wastes their time too, because it has to read through each space. So it's probably like space, 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 space. And you're like, exactly. That's annoying.
Yeah. You know? And imagine when you're like, if you're like, especially in the WordPress space where they like love indenting for like 8 levels of indentation.
No good reason.
And then you're like, oh, well, okay. Like, this line is just all spaces. I don't actually know what, like, you're in the Braille reader and then it's like just all spaces. You never know what's on the other side, because it just goes off. But yeah, no. So when I heard that, I was like, no, this is legit.
Yep.
So a bit harder to change like decades of your own kind of preference, but
especially for years.
Yeah. Doing it for years. Yeah. But when I heard that, I was like, because before that, it felt so like, okay.
It was just a funny argument.
Yeah. It was a funny argument. Oh, well, you know, with tabs, you can adjust it to whatever you like and all that stuff. And I was like, I get that. But it's like really annoying for like formatting. You know, like when you're mm-hmm. doing output and things like that. But I just felt like, no, okay. Like, if you're somebody that needs like special needs around like your mm-hmm. screen reader, like, and it does negatively impact you, like, I feel like that trumps basically
any opinion,
any opinion you have basically on that. And so that's why I say like, I don't say reluctantly, but like, it's hard. Like I said, it's hard to change your own habits, because like I've always used spaces, but I would tell somebody now, like, you're better off using tabs if you can for that reason. Even if there's not a ton of people, like, you know, I think about that all the time, because I'm just like, programming sweet. Like, if you can do it, which is like amazing to me, like, I can't even imagine having to do that, but there's a non-negligible amount of people that are, you know, blind or have like high sight issues, and that is useful for them. So it's like, that's really important. So that's where I found myself.
Well, coming back around to like the neurodivergent side of it, right? Yeah. So speaking more to that, and like, I think whether you're neurodivergent or not, I think the thing that you spoke to with that relates to sort of like anyone who might be blind as a developer or whatever is like, it's a passion for us. Like, it is not a job. And I think that a lot of people really struggle to relate to that and also really struggle to understand our work in that way.
Yeah.
Like, my husband doesn't get it. He's just like, it's your job. And I was like, it's my life. Like, it's like hard. My everything. And so I think, like, if you are of the mindset, right, that programming is a beautiful thing for you because you love to build things with Legos very similarly, right?
Yeah.
And it's, you don't let those sort of neurodivergence or other disabilities kind of slow you down, right? You just work around them and still very admirable. But I think that what I'm getting to is, like, when programming's in your blood, it's in your blood and there's no stopping it, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really hard. Like, it's that's why, like, it's, I mean, you've said it perfectly, you know, like, that's why I keep going back to programming. Like, I get pushed into, like, different directions. And then when I listen to my heart, I'm just like, what I really want to do, like, it's, that's the same reason a lot of developers dream about having their little side business,
mm-hmm.
because they just want to tinker on the, like, one of the best, it was a blog post. I'll try to find it for you if you want. I don't know if you do show notes, but basically
I do. Yeah.
It was called, like, something about garden, but basically, like, I just want to putter in my garden, basically. Like,
Yes.
Like, I'll find, it's Bear Blog, I think.
It's your hobby. You want to go play with your hobby.
Yeah. But it's like, if you do gardening, right? Like, you want to just go putter in your plants.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if, you know, like, I basically, at some point, like, I work on a product called Emir, and basically I wanted to modernize the code for, like, fix all this stuff to, like, make it, like, at the recent PHP versions. And then I just tinkered and fixed it, and I could, you know, I could just, if you want to spend time, like, writing a test or doing the stuff, you can just, like, putter around and do that stuff. And that's a lot of, you know, when you talk to programmers that wish that had their own little business, it's like, they're not necessarily looking to have, like, I'm not looking for a six figure a year necessarily, like, business. Like, I'm just looking for something where I can, like, wake up in the morning and, like, work on my code and make, again, it's a developer product, just make people's life easier. Like, I don't have a ton of clients, but, like, the clients that use my product love it. So that makes me super happy. I wish I could reach more people, and that's different. That's a bit like the struggle with your clients, but that's,
you,
like,
are one of my clients, technically.
Yeah,
if that's the
case.
You are my client profile.
I am your client profile, in a way. It's just like, I just make $1,000 a month, so it's like, I'm not in
your client
profile in the revenue, but it's that.
But you know, but right? Here's the thing, though. You're, just to speak to you, only because there's an opportunity here, and I rarely talk about my business, but I think here's the thing, though, is like, you could be a $5,000, a $10,000 business. If your clients love your product as much as they do, there are more of your clients out in the world.
Of course,
who love your product. So it's just finding them.
It's hard to market.
Which is
it's finding
easy.
Them. It's hard. No, that's it. It's not easy. And it's like a WordPress product. Although I'm, like, looking to branch out. Wait, I don't want to get into the stupid drama, but like, the clients that I use it stick with it because they love it, you know, because I'm always like, and I wish I could do more. Like, all I have, like, this laundry list of ideas of things that I would love to build, but I'm just like, I have to do consulting, I have to live, you know, but that's a lot of what the program is. You talk about programmers that, like, want to build their little business. I would argue that most of the time when I talk to them, they're not looking for a huge payout necessarily, you know,
if they want to scratch that itch, they want to do something.
Like, when I was looking to when I was having acquisition talks, like, I was just looking to, okay, like, how much do I need? Like, I would go backwards and I was like, okay, how much do I need so that I can just, like, program for the rest of my life, basically.
Yeah.
And, like, build stuff, you know, whatever it is.
Come build,
like,
stuff with me.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you have my email.
I do.
So, but it was like, just building stuff is fun, you know, like, and I know some programmers that do it a lot more than me. Like, I have friends that, I have a friend in particular, like, who just, like, is always, like, trying to break shit, basically. Mm. He has the hacker gene. He has the hacker gene. I always say, like, I have the reverse engineering gene. Like, it's like they're different things. I always tell people, like, the hacker is like, did they think about this edge case? They're always like trying to break it in some way. Mm-hmm. And then the reverse engineering, you don't necessarily have either of them, but I just know I'm a really good reverse engineer because I'm really curious about how they got it. Like, how did they get there? You know? And then you like try to reverse, okay, what could they have used? What could they have done? And then you kind of build from that, which is very different from like breaking stuff. Cause like he's crazy. Okay. So we're dealing with a lot of nerds. So there's probably a couple of World of Warcraft people in there.
Oh, guaranteed. Lots of gamers. So
basically it was the third expansion. The second expansion of World of Warcraft was like kind of like, it's called Wrath of the Lich King. And they had an event that was called like zombies. They had zombies. And this game is two-sided. You have one side, you have like Horde Alliance, basically. But during that event, if you were a zombie, you were on the third side, zombies. And basically, you couldn't build a guild that was like, could only be on one side. But what he did is he got zombies to sign his guild charter. And then he basically, so he had characters on both sides. And then he got scared to even log in because they were like, if they find out like that I have like a guild. Now they have it as a feature, like it doesn't matter anymore. But like 10 years ago, he just broke it. Like,
he's just incredible.
Like, but like, yeah, but it, you just need people to have that brain, right? Like, it's like, and he's a self-taught developer. Like, he has high school education, but he's like kind of like savant.
Voila.
Savant level. Yeah. Savant level. I mean, he's so funny. Like, he works with maps and stuff like that. And he's the most geographically challenged person I've ever met. Like, he can't go two blocks without using a GPS, basically. But he works with maps all the time.
But when you know how to solve problems, you know how to solve problems.
Exactly. So it's great. But that's like that's what I love about programming. Exactly. It's like you have that. Just it's all about building stuff and like fixing problems, breaking things. Like, I don't know.
I agree.
There's nothing like it. So that, again, that's why like you go back to it. Like, if it, like you told your husband, it's in your blood, right? Like, I just, I like that a lot. And I like programmers, and they're my people. That's why, like, it was really hard to think about management.
Yep. Absolutely.
A decade ago because of that. Yeah.
Yeah, fully agree. Okay, so let's actually talk shop a little bit more. Okay, we've already been on here for a long time. So we're like,
you could have me for 2 hours. You know me, right? So
I didn't have like meetings.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are your favorite tools in terms of like developer tools, right? You like building tools for developers, but what are you like using? What's your kind of tool stack?
Yeah, so I'm still very involved in the PHP space. I'm a big PHP. Is it Stan when you're a fan of? Like, basically, like, I don't know. But basically, I'm a PHP fan. And actually, I was just at, I had a Christmas party dinner just before the holidays with a bunch of programmer friends. They're all in the video game industry. And it was me and another friend. We were talking about PHP, and we were just saying, PHP is great. Like, I just love PHP. So inside PHP, there's Laravel. You asked about Laravel on LinkedIn recently. I really like Laravel. I mean, the programmer in me, the kind of like OCD programmer in me doesn't like Laravel all that much because there's a lot of magic, but it gets stuff done. Like, it's like, you get like, you know, like at the end of the day, like, you asked about Rails too. Like, if I had to learn another framework next, I would probably learn Rails.
Yeah,
because it's the same kind of energy. Like, if you're a developer that wants to get stuff done, like, I pay attention to a lot of what Taylor says for that reason, because like Taylor has a good sense of what developers want, you know, like
he is a developer.
He's a developer. He builds for himself.
Exactly.
And so I really like PHP, Laravel. I was trying to think of stuff that frustrates me recently, but I mean, a lot of stuff that frustrates me recently is all database related. Like, I just I had to MySQL and MariaDB not not working together anymore. It's a pain in the ass. Like, I find there's a lot of pain around databases. And I'm a sysadmin. Like, I don't have a perfect solution to how we make that less painful. Like, I know, like, there was, like I played around with some of the auto-scaling stuff, too. But it wasn't even around that. It was just, like, backups and restore. Like,
backups and restore.
Just backups and restore. Like, the number of times, like, a backup breaks for me when I'm dealing with client stuff. Like, I'm just like, okay, I have to manually edit it because it's like, it was taken in one version of this and it's not compatible for that. Like, it's just really obnoxious. A lot of the stuff that you like, this one's like really for the sysadmin in your audience, mail servers. Mail servers are the worst. I still have to manage some mails. Mail servers are the worst. I still have to manage one for a client, and I hate every time that I have to deal with it. I'm so thankful for ChatGPT now to like save me from having to scour through old Usenet posts to try to find out what's going on with this archaic stuff. But I have huge respect for anybody that works with mail servers on a daily basis and keeps them running and deals with spam and all that stuff, because it's in mailboxes and all that stuff. It's just really painful. Like, but yeah, like on the dev side, it's like, it's really like the database stuff now feels like the worst. It's like,
yeah, you know, is it like in a WordPress sort of like tech stacks? I feel like databases are such a nightmare there, but like in sort of like other technology, databases are a lot more efficient.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the day-to-day usage of the database. Yeah. I mean, it's not like, if I had a choice, I'd use Postgres, but it's like most of the, even Laravel, they're kind of like MySQL heavy. Like, it's just the PHP just loves MySQL.
Yeah, it really does.
So they really like MySQL and PHP land. So you just end up using a lot of it. But I don't know if I'd have as many problems with Postgres and stuff like that. Again, because like it's just on the MySQL MariaDB fork stuff. Like, also, like, I'm a bit worried for the next like decade. Like, there's just a lot of forks happening. Like, Nginx got forked. Like I think Redis got forked. Like, it's just because, you know, and it's just really hard to like, the compatibility around all those things is like hard. Like, it's just, it's annoying around that stuff. So, but yeah.
I hate to say that this is even a thing, because like, obviously these are my clients, so they're fruitful and necessary, and like, we love them, but I think the developer tools ecosystem has kind of sort of like gotten a little too crazy. And I'm not saying it's too crazy and that there are too many tools per se, but I think that we're seeing a lot more of developer tools being creative. And I think that when we do that, it's developers trying to make a tool, right? And we kind of talked back to, you know, how that can be problematic and not understanding sort of the growth side of it and actually the market fit side of it.
Yeah.
But I think that that is sort of the negative, right, of all the developer tools, is like, you want to make an opinion about a developer tool that you want to start using, but it's like, does it perfectly fit with everything else, right? Can I use it?
Right, exactly. Well, I think a lot about that. It's kind of weird, right? Because so with Emir, a lot of people are like, okay, what do I use locally? Because for Emir, just for a background, is like basically infrastructure management. Like, it's like basically the Laravel Vapor, but for WordPress right now. And
That's cool.
So it manages your AWS infrastructure and all that stuff. But a lot of people are like, okay, but what do I use locally? And I'm like, whatever you want. I did not make this.
Yeah.
I don't want to pick. So it's weird because some developers, they just want to be handheld.
They do, especially WordPress.
In WordPress, but I find like it's just newer developers, maybe some that come from bootcamp, where it's not like we talk about it like when it's in your blood, because like I think we'll see more of that, you know, because the job market's a bit difficult. I think we might see more of the people that stay are the people that really are, that's in their blood kind of thing. Because like a lot of the boot camps was like, oh, there's a ton of money here, let me just do a boot camp and then do programming.
I agree with that.
And they want to be handheld, right? Like, they're not asking questions. They'll go to ChatGPT And just be like, can you do the whole thing for me? And then when they don't, they're just upset.
I feel like those are the developers that will make it through sort of this AI boom, right? Because there's all this conversation of like Cursor and Bolt and V0 and all these tools that can help you write code.
But it's like, who's going to
stay? It's going to be the ones that's in their blood. Yeah, you
tried
them.
Yeah, I tried them. I mean, I want to do a talk on that. Like, I like AI more.
Do it on the Built for Dev Hub.
Huh?
Do it on the Built for Dev Hub. My little ticker across the bottom. People don't even know I have a giant developer community of like developer hangouts, developer events.
But I've been pitching this talk for a year and a half now, but basically I think of AI more as a pair programming tool.
Exactly. It's more of your buddy, your little assistant.
Your little assistant, right? And I think it works better for, again, the people that it's in their blood, right? Because like you're like, I use it. You know what it's been the most useful for? Like, it's kind of funny because I was talking with, you know, we have a friend in common called Toby, and I was talking with, he was asking me a question. He's like, why did you name it this way? And I was like, oh, I just had a conversation with ChatGPT about naming stuff. Because like, you know, the saying in programming, there's two hard things in programming, cache invalidation and naming things. And ChatGPT is amazing for naming things. Like, I'll have discussions about it. I'm like, nah, I don't like this. Like, can you think of other things? And then eventually, like, we nail down a name that like fits what's going on in my head. I love that. But it's kind of having that discussion. But yeah, so it's hard for tools. Like for me in the WordPress space, exactly. Like a lot of it want to be handheld. Some of them don't. Yep. And then I built a tool where you're not supposed to be handheld that much. So it's been a lot of struggle for my growth, basically, because of that. Because you have, if you're thinking about your clients, if we want to talk shop a bit, probably you have to think about what developers you're aiming for. Are you aiming for the people like me who just need a really good documentation site? Like, I get comments on my documentation site because I care a lot about documentation. So I wrote a lot of it.
Developer experience matters.
And that's great for those developers, but some of them just want to be handheld. Yep. And in that scenario, the document site, they don't really care about it because they're not going to read it.
Yeah.
And so it's really hard on that respect. That's why I was saying like they come to me and then they're like, okay, what do I use locally? And I'm like, whatever you want. I'm not here to, like, I try to make the tool for developers. In my mind, the developers are, they're opinionated. They want to work the way they're comfortable with. So I don't want to, I try as little as possible to get in their way of doing that. And so, but that's a really interesting discussion to have, like when you're talking with your clients, because depending on which type, like archetype of developer they're aiming for, the doc site's useless for them because like nobody's going to go visit it because they just want to be completely handheld.
Well, that comes into like knowing your exact, like, just to kind of speak to what you're saying, right? And this is how I try to be different. And maybe you and I should get on like a strategy session since you're my friend. I'll give you some of my time. Yeah. But like, because there is a target audience for your tool, right? And so when you can figure out that target audience, that's when you can build that experience around them. Because if it is, say, your target audience ends up being, just depending on your solution, right? I'm just hypothetically throwing out examples here. Let's say that your target audience ends up being developers who do need to be handheld. That changes everything, right? If your target audience is less technical, but is still building WordPress sites, still has to deal with infrastructure, but they don't necessarily know, and I'm not saying this is your audience, I'm just throwing out things. You're going to have more docs. You're going to have an onboarding experience. You're likely going to have tools that connect things together that that connect to their pre-existing solutions. You may even have to have an opinion around what to use locally. You don't have to build it, but you can say, I think you should use this, and here's exactly how you connect it. Because like you said, there is there's a scope with a target audience, right? And it's, what does that person look like? And when you can actually sit down and narrow into that exact audience, then you can build a product that perfectly does exactly what they need.
Yeah.
And you know where they're hanging out. So you know how to go find them. You know what they like. Yeah. It's a very interesting, but at the same time, right? You're like in this technical founder in this state of like, what do I do?
Yeah. Where and do I'm I also go? In the WordPress space, which is the worst.
Exactly. The WordPress space.
Like, I'll lose, because the WordPress space is like so large on skill level that it's like impossible, basically. Because, like, I have.
Unless you niche down.
Yeah, but I'm like, I always joke, right? I'm a niche within a niche within a niche in WordPress. Like, I did an object-oriented programming book for WordPress. Like, you have a
Yeah,
quote.
that's.
You have a quote on it, you know? So on the
Yep.
landing page. So it's really hard because, like, I'll get clients, they're like, I can't install a plugin. I'm like, of course you can't install a plugin. Like, this is like an enterprise thing. And I have enterprise clients, they're like, oh no, this is fine. Like, you know, like, but I know who my target are. It's just like in the WordPress space, it's hard because it's like all the enterprise agencies and they have like deal VIP and all that stuff. Like, without getting into all the details for like the non-WordPress people, but they're like, I've been in this space for 5 years trying to market this. Like, I have a good idea. Like, what I do a lot is plant seeds. Like, I call it planting seeds. Like, I just like build relationships with agencies and stuff like that. People that I know have the technical know-how to use the product.
Exactly.
And
And
then
need it.
when they're ready, they have the client, the project where they're ready to use it, then we start having the discussion. So it's like a much longer term thing because it's so niche. It's so niche, right? But just talking on for like the larger products that are thinking about developers, yeah, I've thought about that. Like, okay, how do I make it easier? But it's just in WordPress, it'll never solve it all because they'll be like, okay, you connected to my GitHub repo, it deploys automatic. You put the GitHub action, you made it all automatic and beautiful. I actually don't know how to git push deploy or like what, you know, like it's just, you know, like there's a lot of people, they're just used to like, why can't I SFTP into this? And I'm
Yeah,
just like,
totally, totally.
so it's just really hard on that respect. It's nothing to do with, but it shows to like, okay, who are your developers? But I'm stubborn, basically. I'm a Taurus, I'm stubborn, and I just want to keep building it for people like me. And
Exactly.
hopefully, there's more. Like, it slowly people find me, and then I do have a couple of customers, but it's hard. Like, it's the reality also of like building developer tools is that when, especially if you're a more advanced dev, like it's hard. Like, when you're trying to deal with the different skill ranges, it's hard to build a developer tool where you're like, okay, I love this tool. I think people in my skill level are going to love this tool, but actually I need to make it so that lower skill people or like people with different like educational backgrounds or whatnot, like we were talking about, like boot camp. If you come from a boot camp and it's less in your blood, like it's more of a, like it's a job more than like a passion, right? Like, you know, to talk like a millennial, right? Like, it's just like, you know, for a lot of people, programming is, for people like me, programming is a passion, right? Like, if I wanted to make money, I'd be like doing something completely else. Like, not programming wise, but I wouldn't be sitting in my basement building a product and just doing a little bit of consulting. Like, I just, so you have to think about that too. So when you're thinking about the devs and all that stuff, because it's just some of them, they're just, no, like I'm using whatever is cool right now because that's where the money is. And then just do it all for me, please, ChatGPT slash Cursor slash Bolt. Like, write the website for me, write the project for me. I don't, and then it's great for me because I come in after and I clean up their work, basically. Cause like, cause that's like one of the things that people don't, the less businessy people don't necessarily understand. The more businessy people, sorry, the less developer people don't understand is that it's easier to write new code than to maintain old one. And so like for me on my consulting side, like I just end up doing that a lot of the time. Like, it's like, oh, I have to maintain people's old stuff, and developers want to work on the new and shiny, and they don't want to work on
They
the new
do.
stuff. But also from a skill level, you need to be more skillful to work on old code. Like, you don't want to break things. You have to be able to keep more stuff in your head at once. So
I
it's just,
agree.
so it's, yeah. Sorry, we went on a tangent, but
That's okay. No, that's where the show's supposed to go. We do need to wrap up though, because I do have a meeting. You gotta love that. Okay, so last question. We can kind of fill the last 5 minutes here before. It's 11 a.m. personally for me. What what do you do when you get stuck? Because obviously you work as a consultant, you're also building the product. You don't work side by side with a lot of developers, except for in your projects and your actual client work.
Yeah, correct.
So how do you sort of get unstuck or, you know, work through those challenges when they do arise?
Well, now, like as what we talked about earlier, like now I do ChatGPT.
I figured.
So, and I can give you a super cool example from from the holidays. So I was having an issue with Emir. I was having bots sign up, which was really weird because like it just sends a verification email, but I was starting to get like some spam complaints and like weird auto replies because they were using the right email. They were using correct email, but they were just entering gibberish basically for the full name. Yeah. It was like, and I was like, I was trying to talk with ChatGPT, like, how can you like, can we do a like a gibberish like validator thing? And they were like trying to figure out entropy. Anyways, it was completely off basically. Like I tried a couple of things, it wasn't working. But then I asked it, could you think something, like give me solutions that are so outside the box, you know? And it gave me a couple of things. Like it was like use like language models to like evaluate the names. I was like, okay, that's a bit too crazy. But
yeah, that's a little too crazy.
It suggested something called name API. So there's an API that exists. It's like an old site. Like it looks like straight out of the like early 2000s, basically.
But it's
called nameapi.org, I think. And it's a name parsing API. So it will in multiple languages, like it supports Cyrillic and Kanjis and all that stuff. But it will, you send it a name and it will return back, like you say, okay, I'm giving you a full name, and it'll parse it, try to figure out what the first name is, and then it'll give you a confidence interval and a likeliness and of that it's a name. And then I just basically started. So I was like, oh, this is good. And then I was like, started playing with it. Like I had my API tools, like Postman, and I was like testing to see. And I was like, okay, like this could work. And I didn't ask more from ChatGPT. I was just like, okay, like this is good. Yep. And I built it's a Laravel app. So I built a validation tool that just sends the name over via the API, gets it back. If the confidence interval is below a certain threshold, basically you reject it. And all the spam went away basically. But that was like a way of like, because I was just like, I don't want to put a captcha. Like I hate captcha.
Yep.
So I didn't want to put a captcha on the site. And I just didn't, you know, I don't send a lot of emails, but I was a bit worried like I'd get like on spam lists or something like that.
Sure. Totally.
So I was just like, oh, like get me something like,
totally.
So I was a bit stuck, right? Like I was a bit stuck and I was just like, okay, find me something crazy.
You get creative solutions.
Like throw me some stuff. Like, and then I can just, some stuff, it was hallucinating. You still got to do your editing job, but basically
for sure,
it threw that out. And I was like, oh my God, this is an actual thing. It exists. They have a free tier, which is super generous. And I was just like, cool. I built it. And it took me, I think 2 hours. I built it, shipped it. And then it was done. And it was like, but a lot of it is ChatGPT. Like ChatGPT is really good at getting on you unstuck. Like it's really good at like the blank page problem. If you do I do a lot of writing too, right?
I agree with that. Give me somewhere to start. Give me an outline at least.
Give me, what will you write? What will you do? Like, cause sometimes I've written a lot. So I know when it's giving me stuff that I think is trash, but I'm trying to get substance. I'm trying to get the ball rolling. And sometimes that's what you need. Like, so for me, it's like my go-to. Like I always tell people, like outside an IDE, I can't think of a tool that changed my way of working more than ChatGPT did. Like, and again, I'm not using it like Cursor or whatnot.
Yep,
like,
totally. Unstuck fundamentally, not necessarily programmatically.
Because I saw on Twitter, on like, you know, the Peter levels and stuff, they're like cursor. This is like the bomb. And I've seen like some videos of people using it. And look, I get it,
it's powerful.
It is great, but I think it's a tool for the people that we were talking about, the boot campers.
Yep. Yep. Or it's a tool. I mean, like, or me, right? Like, I haven't, yeah. I don't code a lot. And we talked about that, how I've like gotten distant away from my technical chops. And so it's beautiful for me to just go in there and be like, oh, walk me through this. Like, I would go in there and I'm like, create me a getting started guide. And I did it for one of my clients because I couldn't find, like, there, this is a whole digression, but there was, documentation was hard to find, right? And so I was like, give me a getting started guide and walk me through it. And like, it had errors, but I was able to push back and be like, that's not going to work. You didn't even ask me for the API key. So I could like push back enough, I do agree. You have to like technologically understand what you're doing and then it's incredibly valuable.
Yeah. I think that the cursor versus ChatGPT as a pair programmer, I think speaks a lot to like the passions versus like, There was somebody on Twitter. It was like just the doers versus like, I don't know, the tinkerer. I forget what they were talking about, but you know, just want to do, they just want it done.
They want the results.
They want the result. They don't care. But like the people that are more on the passion side, like I think ChatGPT more as a pair programmer fits them better because like I want to get my hands in it a bit more. Than just having a discussion with somebody and fixing stuff. And, you know, like I want my variables a specific way and it can learn all that stuff.
Yeah. But, or if you're like in an enterprise role. So like Cursor, we had there was one call or an interview a few weeks ago where they essentially were using it as a productivity tool. So they asked their teams to start using it, which I think is valuable, but I fully agree with what you're saying, right? It's like, if you're already deep into it, you're likely not to use Cursor. You're likely to solve
the problem. Yeah. I mean, I'm always like keen on paying attention to like tools and things like that, just because I find it interesting. Like, you know, I was an early user of ChatGPT, and I think there was a lot of benefits once it got really good.
I agree. Okay, so I do have to go.
Yeah.
But okay. Two notes. First note, you should probably come in my business more because you like love dev tools so much. And like, I actually could use a bit more like technical nerdiness when it comes to some more dev tools. So let's talk about that. Yeah, absolutely. And then the The second note I wanted to just throw out, ArcJet. So if you go look, so it's ArcJet.com. It's a developer tool. One of my past clients, I guess I could say it's still current. We still have some impending things, but that's what they do actually was the solution that you built out is like, yes, there are many different ways that someone can come in and actually start to like spam you or annoy you or hit your endpoints or overuse things. Mm-hmm. And so it's a security as code tool. So it allows you to basically put those security layers into your code. I think you would like it and other people listening would probably like it. And since
I'm looking now,
I'm gonna shout it out there. So they're working on the Laravel one. Okay, so they don't, they're modern JS right now. And I think they're working towards that future of like the Django and the Laravel world.
I see Django, Ruby on Rails, Laravel SDK is coming soon.
Exactly.
Yeah. Bug detection, rate limiting, email validation. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're little things, but nothing like bots and hacking makes you think outside the box more.
Exactly. You know?
Like even for my consulting stuff, like I have to deal with a lot of bots, like like at the server level.
I can imagine.
And doing that in clever ways is tricky, you know, like because they can't use Cloudflare and stuff like that, so you have to be a bit more creative. But yeah, absolutely. But that looks cool. I just looked at it, so that's great.
Yeah, super 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 cool founder. Okay, so to wrap up, where can folks find Carl, your product and your work?
Okay, I lost actually tabbing. I now have a blank screen for the restream thing, so but basically, it's emirapp.com.
Okay, perfect.
So that's my little side product. CarlAlexander.ca is where I used to write a lot. Now I just basically write my year in reviews and I have my book there. Where people can find, I mean, I used to be on Twitter. I'm kind of gone. I'm trying to basically get off social media, to be honest. But I would say LinkedIn now. I think that where I'm like trying to be active more. I mean, I'm not really posting, but if I started to post, I'd probably post on LinkedIn because It's just everybody's kind of more fragmented now, right? Like, and then
LinkedIn is definitely the go-to for devs.
Yeah,
or GitHub.
Yeah, GitHub. Like, it's Carl Alexander basically. But yeah, I think LinkedIn is usually the best at this point. And yeah, it's good. I could. I took talk for hours. Own podcast. We're gonna get you on my podcast now, and then we'll talk for another hour. It'll be great. So
yes, absolutely. It has been super awesome hanging out with you. Just like we talked about, developers love spending time with each other, which is why I'm investing so heavily in the actual Built for Dev Hub. So if folks are interested in rewatching this after the fact, or to come hang out in some of the other awesome developer events and hangouts, you can visit that at hub.builtfor.dev. Carl, it has been so awesome talking to you. This will be on all the channels that has been streamed and also a podcast. And I look forward to coming on your podcast.
Yeah. Soon. I'll send you an email about that. Okay.
Perfect. All right. Bye, friends.
Bye.